Oral History, Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. Oral History Interview on February 27, 1975, Side 8, Mrs. Aaron being interviewed by Jean Dickman and Marcia Frommerman. All right, won't you go ahead, Mrs. Aaron?
Life in a child is not exactly the right point. Can't be ignored. There was a time, all right, you didn't do it, you failed. You get a poor grade. Some children learn at different speeds and they have to be accommodated. I've gone a long way toward adjusting to that. The single program or single schedule is easier for the teacher, but it doesn't meet the needs of children. We've done a great deal of that on the elementary level, not nearly enough, but I think it's coming. I think an exciting example of this on the high school level is the adoption only day before yesterday of an enormous number of, the 15 or 20 mini courses in the high school, giving young people a chance to put together the kind of a program that suits them and suits their needs. That is the direction in which I think a great deal has been done. Of course, there's the constant training and upgrading of teachers in service training is enormously important, not to rely exclusively on what the university happens to offer. The schools have to take the leadership in determining their needs and finding the people to help. The integration I have mentioned as some progress, of course, we need a great deal more. Schools can't do everything alone, but it is the one experience that everybody shares. I think we've come to terms to some extent, with living with unions. They're here, there are problems, there are going to be more problems. And I think that is one of the areas in which we have to work things out and perhaps things will settle down. Well, one thing that I think we have not accomplished yet is a solution for the large group of maladjusted children who just don't fit. The kind of youngster who once upon a time left school and went to work and now is expected to stay in school. And the child who may be a seriously disturbed emotionally. Is the root, perhaps, of much of our problem of crime and violence, for whom we do not have an adequate program. We've made a start. We have afternoon, evening high schools. We have individually tailored programs for these children. We need a full-time school. We need something far further down in the school system than we have today, and for far, far more children. And the use of understanding and insights that we just don't have yet.
Do you see as part of an essential total curriculum for a school of the future to include, in addition to cognitive skills and physical skills, the teaching of social and emotional growth to children? That is an integrated part?
I think it's a necessary part. I don't think you can take it out and label it as a course. Everybody would run a mile. I think much of that has to come through the sensitivity of teachers and through the structure of the program that makes these things possible. You can't say to kids, for instance, you've got to sit at the lunchroom, you're white, you're black, now you've got to mix this table. You've got to let those things fall as they will. But you can put children together on a constructive project and get something done. Now, you can't, with unions as they are, for instance, have kids paint the school cafeteria. But if they did, I don't think you'd have black and white children throwing paint at each other. And we've got to find more of that type of thing. If it's only the putting on of a play or the creator or the doing of a report, but there are many ways in which you can cross lines and in the course of it develop sound emotional and mental attitudes.
You and what you've done with your life in serving the community are a prime example for those who cherish the idea that a woman can volunteer and serve her community. Now, early in 1975, we have seen some organizations, like the National Organization for Women, that have been saying that women should be remunerated for everything that they do. There are many women who disagree with that stance. And I wonder what you would say to the women of the future about the advantages of approaching service to community life the way you have.
Well, I think it has been tremendously satisfactory. I think it eliminates a lot of conflicts because when you have a greater flexibility on your time. You don't find yourself with your husband having one vacation while you have another. You can adjust hours, and unless it's a financial necessity, I think it's very difficult for women to take on full-time responsibility and create the kind of a home that they want to create. I don't think everybody can come home tired at the same hour. Of course, I think one of the great lacks in our society is the opportunity for part-time work for women, which would solve many of those problems. I think while we had a teacher shortage, for example, there was some hope that we might get to that in teaching. I think most people would rather have, for example, in the elementary school, two first-class teachers for a child than one third grader full-time. But with jobs getting tight, I think that's not going to happen very fast. But I think there's tremendous satisfaction in volunteer work, provided you take it seriously, and personally, I revolt from the idea that the only measure of worth is money, and that if you're not paid, what you're doing is worthless. On the other hand, I think women who need work, who need compensation, for many reasons, should have the opportunity to get it. I believe in volunteer work for men, too.
You have talked to us over the period of these interviews about your accomplishments, your successes. I think even once or twice you've mentioned some failures. Is there anything else that you would like to add about your accomplishments, your successes, or your failures?
I don't think so. I've never been a person who spent an awful lot of time worrying about my role and what I did. I've had a good life. I've enjoyed the things I've done, my family and my community work, and I'm not sure that I'd change too much of it.
Mrs. Aaron, as we look across the United States, we recognize Pittsburgh as one of the few urban centers that has been able to keep their white population from leaving Center City in huge numbers. Maybe historians or people in the future will look to our school system and say maybe they did something right that helped keep whites from fleeing. What do you think about that?
I think some of it maybe to the credit of the school system. I think some of it is due to the entire climate of the community, which was, in a way, anticipatory. Pittsburgh had a human relations commission before there were riots. Maybe not as effective as it might have been, but it was working. There was an awareness of a need for these things in the city itself and in the schools, so that some of the tensions perhaps were reduced, and the quality of the schools in many cases I think helped people stay, because the schools at one time were better than they are in the suburbs. I don't think it's true now. I think part of it may have nothing to do with schools or social directions. It may be as much topography as anything. That the hills and valleys of Pittsburgh, or the whole western Pennsylvania area, tend to discourage a certain amount of movement. You can't move over the border. In most parts of Pittsburgh, you can in some, South Hill, North Side, and more or less without isolating yourself from the community in which you lived previously. And perhaps our very poor transportation facilities have made some people hesitate to go.
I wonder if we could close on one last example. Our newspapers in the last 24 hours have reported that the school board has accepted a Mellon grant of some $190,000 to train some approximately 12 principals who are already in the system. I wonder if you would tell us where that idea originated, who went to the Mellon Foundation for those funds, and what you foresee as the outcome of this training for these principals.
I'm not quite sure who went to the Mellon Foundation. He's a member of our administrative staff, no doubt. And I think the outcome, we can only improve things by increasing the sensitivity of our principals, their flexibility. They're crucial. The climate of a school is determined by a principal. The way a principal treats different youngsters, different groups, the way a principal handles his or her teachers. The role of the principal today has become enormously complicated because of the restrictions placed by collective bargaining, things a principal may or may not do, by the fact that a school is regarded as a community institution and the principal is expected to listen to the parents. My morning mail, I noticed, has three letters, all from one school. I haven't opened them yet to see what it's about, written by youngsters, but probably demanding something. Sometimes these things express very valid needs, and principals have got to learn how to cope with them. Principals have to, can be the focal point as to whether you have tensions or not, is you get to the bottom of an outburst, or you merely rule it out as bad. And that is where I think we can accomplish more than anything else. In fact, the pressures on principals have become so great that we're even finding people reluctant to take principalships because of the pressures, and reinforced by this kind of training.
Therefore, you did vote in favor of acceptance.
Oh, yes, I've always voted in favor of acceptance of grants. That's one way we eke out our so-called, our rather meager income in terms of, not in terms of $100 million, isn't meager, but in terms of the needs and the increasing expectations of schools as the means of solving every social problem.
So certainly you see this procedure of training, further training the principals as a forward step.
Yes. We must also remember that very few principals received their any training when they were preparing for the kind of a world in which they were having to function. That's more or less true today of the younger ones. But also our schools of education have been among the less forward-looking institutions in this country. And when you read some of the stuff that is required of administrators, it's a little bit of a call.
Do you feel there is any information that Gene Dickman or I have not covered in these interviews that you would like to add?
I don't think so. I think there's all of us who have grown up and lived through these years are in a little bit the position that Henry Adams was, although we were not capable of writing it in the same way, when he referred the education of Henry Adams to the fact that his preparation for life had nothing to do with the world in which he lived or was going to live. And those of us who were born and educated, reached maturity, for example, before the atomic bomb, and functioning in a totally different climate. And we've had to keep learning and thinking.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Aaron, for talking with us.